And now, the wrestling podcast that calls it right down the middle.
The Whole Reffin' Show.
Welcome to The Whole Reffin' Show. My name is Darren Beasley.
And I'm Perry Smith.
And this is a wrestling podcast. Thank you for joining us. This is our very first podcast here on The Whole Reffin' Show.
Yes, it is. Looking forward to getting into this and talking some wrestling with you, Darren Beasley.
And I'm very happy that you're joining me, Perry Smith.
Ah, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful.
I would like to welcome any and everyone that is listening. I know you're listening because you want to know about wrestling. You want to know more about wrestling. You want to know what we think about wrestling. And we think about wrestling a lot.
A little too much.
I definitely know too much wrestling because I watch too much wrestling and have for a long time. We are going to talk about professional wrestling. Like I said, some folks tend to call it sports entertainment these days. Six of one, half dozen the other, if you ask me. But that's what you came here for. That's what you're paying for, and that's what you're getting.
This might be free. I hope this is free. I hope no one's paying for this.
I hope that somehow they are paying for it.
Okay, no, I want money for this, of course, but...
That's the only reason for anyone to do anything.
Yeah, that's true. That's my motivation, money.
So you've come to The Whole Reffin' Show because you want to listen to another podcast about professional wrestling.
And God bless you for that.
Yes. Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I really do appreciate it. If you're listening, it really means the world to me because, you know, this is the kind of thing you do for fun. I don't know that it could possibly be any more rewarding than to know someone else is deciding to more or less eavesdrop on our fun.
Even if you're listening to see what these idiots have to say about wrestling, and you already hate us, thank you. Thank you for being our first official haters.
Thank you. Because thank you also haven't stopped listening yet.
Yeah. Keep listening.
Unless you just stop.
I think a lot of haters just stopped just then. They went, well, I'm going to show you how much I hate you.
And we'll never know. The world may never know.
The world may never know.
But anyway, so we want you to understand that this is called The Whole Reffin' Show because on this wrestling podcast, we call it Right Down the Middle. We don't always have the same opinion about wrestling. We like a lot of the same stuff. We didn't necessarily come to know wrestling in the same way or at the same time.
No.
And we watch a lot of wrestling together these days that we have different opinions on. I think that's going to allow for a more open discussion that isn't a lot of back scratching and that sort of thing. It's also not going to be any type of vehicle for any corporate entity or any particular wrestling organization because no one's paying us, not even wrestling companies.
Yeah.
So we're spending our money to talk to each other about wrestling. And you're listening.
You're the fly on the wall.
So welcome, flies and humans and any other living creatures that the humans have brought along. I'm just saying you don't have to put your dog or your cat outside.
No. You're covering all bases, and I appreciate that. But yes, like Darren has said, we are just fans of wrestling, much like you are, unless you're just a fan of podcasts, in which case, you know, listen and enjoy. You might be wondering what qualifies these two to even have a podcast about wrestling. Well, we could tell you a bit about ourselves. Who is Darren Beasley?
Who is Darren Beasley? What a you. Question. I know.
I'm asking you, Darren
Beasley. I'm asking myself. I ask myself that every morning because I wake up and I look in the mirror and I say, that is a person. Who is that person?
This podcast may not be about wrestling at all, now that I think about it.
It probably won't be.
Okay.
At least 75% of the time.
Okay.
It will be about self-discovery, self-doubt, self-loathing. And
those are my favorite things.
Well, you know, I start my day asking who I am, and I end every day with the self-doubt and the self-loathing. Somewhere in the middle, there is wrestling.
There's wrestling.
Somewhere in the middle of all of the of hating myself, I will sit down and watch professional wrestling.
But who are you?
Right.
Who so, are you today?
Who am I today? Well, I am today who I am most days. I grew up as an athlete and as a student, as anybody else that goes K through 12 in a public education, public school system. And, you know, you go to school all day and you play sports all night. In my case, that meant, you know, coming home and watching cartoons, except for on Saturday nights at the Superstation. Growing up in South Georgia, only a few hours away from Atlanta, where Ted Turner was building a media empire, and he was very interested in having professional wrestling be a large part of his early programming, because he was fascinated with it somehow. I still haven't figured out if Ted Turner ever actually watched a wrestling match and what he thought about it, but he certainly did put a network on the air, which... which played on my television or my parents' television as a child. And I watched a ton of old Latter Days NWA and right about the time it turned into World Championship Wrestling. And let's see. So, yeah, I did that. Grew up in Georgia. Went to college. I had a bunch of different majors in college. I was going to be a filmmaker. Then I was going to be an artist. Then I was going to be a history professor. The last one stuck a little bit. Started grad school. Then I ran away to California with you. And with some other folks, and thought that, you know, I'm going to make my career in entertainment, not sports entertainment. No. Although there were some delusions of that, but the actual machinations were toward making it either behind the camera or on screen somewhere in Hollywood. Well, that didn't last very long at all, and ever since then, I have found myself. Running French markets, directing catering at the university level, a lot of food service, I've also been quote-unquote, although that kind of discounts what I'm about to say, let's remove the quote-unquote, a photographer for about the last 8 years. Sort of focus on fine art photography, artistic photography, anti-portraiture, whatever you want to call it, and have sold a bunch of pieces. I've had some several showings now. That is something that I would like to turn into like a full-time gig. It's definitely something that fills a lot of my free time. That sort of artistic urge that wanted to be a comic book artist, wanted to be a wrestler, wanted to be a filmmaker, wanted to be a writer. Instead, I'm a photographer and a podcaster, as of right this minute, or as of like 3 or 4 minutes ago.
Tomorrow, who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows?
Tomorrow, who knows? But where I am today is as into wrestling as I ever have been. The kid that at age 7 watched WrestleMania 3 with Patrick Teasley on satellite. The kid that watched WWF on Saturday mornings, the kid that got into WCW Saturday night, that little kid was really into wrestling. That little kid bounced around a little bit, kind of fell off for a few years, and then all of a sudden had his mind blown when Scott Hall appeared on Monday Nitro. And I thought, wait a minute, that's Razor Ramon. What is he doing there? There he is. Next thing you know, Kevin Nash, the NWO, and I spend the next 5 years glued to a television set as I finished high school and college. Then again, after Vince McMahon bought everyone out, I found myself getting bored again. Around the time of the original brand split, and and the change to World Wrestling Entertainment. There was enough things going on in the early 21st century that were coming out of Stamford, Connecticut, and World Wrestling Entertainment that were enough to turn me off. And so it wasn't until about 2005, 2006 that I came back. Again, there was a small period where I got really into wrestling. And that fell off again. As I grew up, I got focused on trying to make this career work or this career work. The last thing I was going to do was sit down and watch hours upon hours of professional wrestling, even if I loved it or had loved it or would have potentially loved it. I simply didn't have the time. I've come back to find it in the last few years, and certainly after attending several WrestleManias now in person, I may be as big a fan as I've ever been. So at this stage, I am a huge wrestling fan, at least as big a wrestling fan as I was when I marked hard every freaking Monday for Hall and Nash in 1996 and 97. So, you know, there's a lot of wrestling that I'm a huge fan of. ECW, 95, 96, 97, 98. Early WCW after the departure from NWA. Certainly everything that happened during the Monday Night Wars. And I'm a big fan of things that are happening now. And I think a lot of what's happening now will naturally be what is talked about during an opening segment of this show. So there'll be plenty of times for me to give you my opinion on what's happening now. But why don't you tell us a little bit about you? Who is Perry Smith?
I don't know. Well, I guess I'm qualified to answer that question. I am originally from Jacksonville, Florida, where I spent my childhood. Watching a lot of TV, listening to a lot of radio, listening to a lot of cassette tapes. Like many people who found wrestling at a young age, I watched whatever was on TV back in those days. Saw a lot of WCW. These were the Sting, Rude, Nikita Koloff years of WCW. And I watched WWF occasionally. I didn't really know the schedules. I didn't really know what TV schedules were. You don't know when things come on when you're a kid. You just watch whatever. You know, oh, wrestling comes on Sunday mornings, I guess. Anyway, I watched a lot of WCW. Watched a bit of WWF back in the day, but I was more of a fan of WCW. And as a child should at that age, still insistent that wrestling is real. It was a real thing. In fact, my first crush, this girl, her name was Lauren in first grade. I was telling her about Nikita Koloff hitting Sting with a steel chair, and she told me that wrestling was fake. And I thought she was an idiot. But because you can't fake that stuff. And I guess she was right in hindsight. She was smarter than I was, and maybe still is. Wrestling kind of lost me throughout the years. Maybe I forgot to tune in, or maybe the schedule changed or whatever. So for a long time, no wrestling. I moved to South Georgia and got back into wrestling, of course, when everyone was into wrestling. Mid-90s was a big deal. A lot of my friends, including you, Darren, were a big fan of wrestling. Told me I should tune in, and I started watching it with you and our mutual friend slash my cousin, John. Really, really enjoyed WCW stuff. This is the infancy of the Monday Night Wars, I guess. Or when the war started getting really heated up. This is right before Scott Hall showed up on Nitro. But I was very, very pro WCW. I wasn't watching any WWF at the time. I was like, no, that stuff sucks, whatever. I was in high school at the time, and people were showing up in Stone Cold Steve Austin t-shirts and talking about how cool Stone Cold was. I was like, oh, who the hell's that guy? Screw you, man. The Outsiders. But eventually, I was sort of watching WWF because I needed just more wrestling to watch, I guess. That was pretty good stuff as well. So I got really, really into that. So I was watching both. I was watching Raw and Nitro. I was staying up until like 2 or 3 in the morning on a school night just to watch all the wrestling I could. And then, of course, more programs, your Thunders, your SmackDowns, and Heat even, all the pay-per-views. I tried to watch as much wrestling as I could, ECW whenever I could. And that was great. And then, so throughout the late 90s, early 2000s, wrestling. And then wrestling really fell off, especially after McMahon, as you said, same thing, after McMahon bought out his competition. It was interesting for a while, but then it really just lost me. Not a lot of interesting things going on. Not a lot of great talent that I'd liked seeing being pushed. Just lost me completely. I didn't think I'd ever go back to it again. Fast forward to about a year or two ago when wrestling just all of a sudden got better. Some interesting people, some interesting concepts, and NXT came into existence, and that was a very cool thing. And that was very new and very different. And yeah, so right now wrestling, I'm watching as much wrestling now as I did back in the late 90s, and that's a lot of wrestling. So enough wrestling to actually do a wrestling podcast. And here we are. Talking about wrestling, yeah.
Thanks for telling me who you are.
Hey.
Actually, thank you for telling the listeners who you are.
Well, I didn't think you knew me well enough. I guess we should acknowledge that. I've known you since...
1993.
Wow. I didn't even know that.
23 years.
Yeah, wow.
That was, I guess, the first time I met you. We really, I guess, weren't... friends.
No.
For the first year or two.
Mutual friend / cousin John.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But around 95, we started hanging out all the time. You know, hanging out together in a crowd.
Right.
And then grew to be very close friends.
Yes.
And even living 3,000 miles apart from one another for long periods of time... have remained great friends, and that's a good thing. And have, even in periods where wrestling wasn't a huge part of our individual or collective lives, and certainly was not an active part of our friendship, there was a great wealth of shared experiences watching wrestling, talking about wrestling, backyard wrestling, and conversations a lot like the ones that we're having now and will continue to have on this podcast,
right?
About the world of professional wrestling.
And there was so much of that, especially nowadays, that we decided we might as well record our conversation.
Exactly. We're both watching as much or more professional wrestling than we have in our entire lives. We both have the interest in entertainment, in art, in broadcasting, for lack of a better term. And so here we are. We're working in the world of broadcasting to some extent. And we're talking about wrestling, which can be considered art,
yeah,
or entertainment, or sports, theater, dance, drama, whatever you want to call it.
Comedy.
It is. In fact, all of those things at once.
Play a comedy.
You're foolish only if you consider it to be one of those things.
Yes. That's very true.
But if you acknowledge that it's at least a few of those things, if not all, then you probably understand wrestling. And Lauren, you know, your first grade classmate from Jacksonville, if she didn't understand that, my gain. My gain.
Right.
Her loss is my gain.
Yeah, I wish I remembered her last name so I could look her up on Facebook. But I digress.
Again.
And just tell her she was right to know more about wrestling.
Funny thing you say about that. I actually discovered that, or not discovered, I had it dumped on me like a load of bricks, that wrestling was fake one fateful Saturday night. When I had actually following a Little League football game that I was playing in on a Saturday morning, had attended a fair at the same sort of sports complex next to the hospital here. And at the fair, there was professional wrestling.
Oh.
Now, there were no stars of note. This is 1988, maybe, 89, something like that. On this ring that was set up on a Little League baseball diamond. And but I watched it. I watched it like I was watching God descend from heaven, or like I was watching, you know, the electric chair as I was being led toward my death, my imminent execution.
Wow.
Basically, I'm saying I was watching it like I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Because I'd already watched a little bit of wrestling, but this was the first time I'd ever seen it in person. No one was so abused as to the point that I freaked out about it. However, that very same day, so enthralled with what I had seen at the baseball diamond following my football game, I ended up on the floor at my grandmother's house in front of the television in her living room, rolling around on the brown shag carpet and watching WCW and seeing the Four Horsemen beat up Sting. And I was so upset that I went to my father crying. And my father, I have no idea what he thought. I have a pretty good idea what he thought. If you knew my father, you would understand why I know exactly what he was probably thinking. But what he was probably thinking and what he said were very different things. I think his dilemma was probably his decision on, okay, I know my son likes this product he's watching on television. I know he does. I know he's also extremely upset about what he is seeing. Do I comfort him by telling him that it's not real? Or do I allow him to believe there's still a Santa Claus by telling him, yeah, man, they really beat the shit out of Sting, you know? Well, he chose the former. He didn't, you know, get mad and, like, dismiss wrestling and say, oh, it's fake or anything like that. But he did explain to me, son, wrestling is like any other television show. It is people playing characters. They are not really doing that to Sting. I'm sure he must have made a statement like, you know, they didn't really shoot J.R. Ewing on Dallas. And I think that sort of comparison made it make sense to me. And
without shitting on it, too.
That's what I mean.
Because I think that is the best way to put it, is to say it's characters like any other TV show. Because Raw, WWE, has definitely become that. I mean,
absolutely.
Because, you know, back then, obviously, it wasn't, oh, sports entertainment, and this is all bullshit. Back then, it was still kayfabe, the idea that wrestling is real, no matter what. If anyone asks you, is wrestling real? Yes. We're really hitting each other. Exactly. So
it was a nice way for him not to shit on something that I loved, but comfort me in that moment.
Right.
And that's really all he had to say, and it worked. And I think that the thing that worked the most was that it didn't kill my interest. That's why it worked. That's why the explanation worked. I've actually heard people give the explanation that when they found out wrestling was fake, that's when they stopped liking wrestling.
Right.
And if that happened to them when they were very young, then they've literally spent their whole lives either not liking wrestling, you know, just indifferent, or actively trying to ruin it for everyone else by going, man, you know that's fake. You know that stuff's fake. And there's no room for that. We all understand professional wrestling has predetermined outcomes. They wrestle to one extent or another a safe style, meaning whether it's the WWE's safe style, as it were, or just the general classic, the boys are taking care of each other kind of style. The intent is not to injure or harm your opponent. Yes, we all understand that, haters. You know, we understand this is not professional boxing. This is not mixed martial arts. Although we can, if you really want to, we can sit here and have a conversation about the infiltration of predetermined outcomes in both of those sports.
We could. We're not. We could, though, and you know what we mean. But and that's a very interesting thing too, is there are people who exist in the world who hate wrestling or hate that people love wrestling, and they'll always hit you with a, you know, that shit is fake. Like, yeah, like I've been watching it for 20 plus years, and now you're bursting my bubble. You're telling me there's no Santa Claus. I know that. I'm still getting something out of it. They're not, you know, pulling the wool over my eyes until they do. Every now and again, sometimes you don't know if something's real or not. And that's the great thing about wrestling. I mean, even if you took away the storylines and all that stuff, I appreciate the athleticism, the technicality of it all. It's all very fun to watch, you know. And if you're watching, you can watch wrestling for a lot of reasons. One, just for matches, if you enjoy watching the dance of a wrestling match. Also, storylines can be very, very well done. But I think a lot of wrestling fans love wrestling for what goes on behind the curtain as well. And I think, I mean, that's a whole nother thing, because there's so much, like, you know, so-and-so beat so-and-so for whatever, but you finding out why so-and-so beat so-and-so for whatever is very interesting to me. All these autobiographies about wrestlers coming out recently and just kind of laying out stories about what went on back then is just so fascinating.
It absolutely is. And the sales of those types of publications are all the proof that anyone needs if they needed to make the argument that it actually behooves the industry to have shown us all behind the curtain.
Right.
The more people know that it's fake, I guess the more that are going to be interested in it to a certain extent. I mean, because I know there are people that will watch wrestling because it's fake, because they would never watch UFC because that to them is too brutal. Or they don't watch boxing because they don't want to see people's faces getting mashed.
Right.
But they'll watch professional wrestling because it's a drama.
Right.
It's a stage play of sorts. And to your point about the publications, autobiographies, books, podcasts, behind-the-scenes shows like Total Divas or Breaking Ground on the WWE Network, all of those shows continue to expose the business even further, and yet have ticket sales dropped? No. Have ratings dropped? Sure. And then they've risen, and then they've dropped, and then they've risen. It's not about kayfabe, and it's not about peeking behind the curtain that's going to hurt ratings or buy rates. Interest in wrestling is increasing, I think, with some of that exposure, because Vince McMahon has managed to infiltrate so many different types of media now, just like he has always wanted to. This is the man who, quote unquote, makes movies. You know, he doesn't put on a professional wrestling show. This is a song and dance man. This is a man who's in the business of making movies, of entertainment. You know, those are his words.
Right.
And he's done it.
I think like we're saying about Hull, like wrestling in itself is entertaining, but knowing what's going on behind the scene is even more so entertaining, or can be very rewarding if you know what's happening. Maybe the best example of that would have to be the Montreal Screwjob. What happened to Bret Hart when he fought Shawn Michaels at Survivor Series 97, if you did not know anything about wrestling, if you just were watching Survivor Series 97, which I guess you paid $40 for it, so you might like to watch wrestling, you would see the Shawn Michaels-Bret Hart match end the way it ended, with Shawn Michaels putting Bret Hart into a bullshit sharpshooter, the bell ringing, McMahon throwing the belt at Shawn Michaels and saying, go to the back, and Bret Hart upset, you'd be like, okay, whatever, and you would turn it off. But if you're a fan, and you know about what happened, like what really happened there, with McMahon screwing Bret Hart out of the belt, there being a predetermined victory of Bret Hart, and this is going to happen, and then just last second, hey, Earl, just ring the bell when Michaels puts the sharpshooter on Bret Hart. That is so interesting. And if you did not know about all that, that's the most controversial thing that's ever happened in wrestling. Or at least, arguably, it's really up there. And if
it
you
has
know,
to be, it has to be in the top three most controversial things to ever occur live on screen.
Absolutely.
That's for sure. Arguments could be made about backstage dealings and holdups and what have you, and, you know, contract, blah, blah, blah. You can talk about that all day long. As far as something that was presented to the wrestling audience, I can't think of anything that is more insanely controversial and unexpected and out of the ordinary than that moment.
Right.
Because you've got signs in the crowd from a smart Montreal crowd that say either like, "We'll miss you, Brett," or signs that say, "Brett sold out." Then you've got Bret Hart drawing the letters WCW in the air with his finger. You have him spitting in Vince McMahon's face. And this is Vince McMahon now. This is not the Mr. McMahon character, which would appear, I guess, the very next week.
At this point, do we even know that McMahon, like, on television...
Unless you know, you don't know.
You think he's just a ring announcer.
Right. Oh, that guy's a commentator.
Yeah, why does he care? Why is he upset at him?
Why is Brett spitting on that nice commentator?
Exactly.
And, you know, it's like, surely he has to announce Aretha Franklin later, you know, to play America the Beautiful. Not with spit on his face from Bret Hart, who... I don't know what just happened, but for some reason Shawn Michaels put Bret Hart in his own finisher, and Earl Hebner rang the bell even though Bret didn't tap. Yeah, you're looking at that and you see the look on Michaels' face, you know something is wrong. You see the, like, slightly bemused smile across Bret's face as everything dawns on him that he's being screwed. You see... Triple H and Gerald Briscoe dragging Shawn Michaels to the back. Michaels is so confused as to whether or not to continue portraying his DX / sexy boy character and, like, you know, stand there and hold the belt up and go, "Ooh," or run to the back. So he's kind of doing half of each.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, that's what you're looking at. I was looking at it. I was sitting there with John Bring watching this live on pay-per-view. And even though we knew a little bit, we were pretty smart after, you know, in the
this before internet was huge.
There was a dial-up connection in the house. Yeah. And we were reading a version of Dirt Sheets. But no, we didn't know everything we were seeing. We knew something was very... odd. You know, we knew that there was something rotten in the state of Denmark. You know, strange things are afoot at the Circle K, and there's no way that was the intended ending of Survivor Series 97.
And it wasn't.
But that's the beautiful thing. And to your point, I know friends of ours who at that time, and in the short few years after that, whose entire interest in the business became about the backstage dealings. Because this person is a few years older than us. You know, they were already beyond that sort of, "Oh, I'm marking out. You know, eat my vitamins, say my prayers." You know, they were well-versed in ECW. And they were at a point in their fandom where even though wrestling was as big and as hot as it had ever been, they were already at an age where... Maybe I'm too old to be doing this, but oh my God, it's so intriguing. So the more fascinating thing to this person, and to many people, I'm sure, that felt that exact way, that all of a sudden decided, holy shit, wrestling that I grew up with is pretty cool. Cooler than that is, I want to find out what happened in that locker room afterward. I want to find out what happened in Vince McMahon's office earlier that night. And as a result, you have explosive documentaries come out like Hitman Hart Wrestling with Shadows.
Mm-hmm.
You have Beyond the Mat. All of a sudden, there is an entire, like, subgenre of wrestling that is wrestling expose. And the creation of that subgenre, you know, which is very small at the time, again... internet in its infancy, no such thing as wrestling podcasts, no shoot interviews, no YouTube, very, very few, if any, wrestling autobiographies.
At this point, no.
You've basically got just these two documentaries. You've got Wrestling with Shadows and Beyond the Mat. But they've created this atmosphere and this subgenre and this cult following, the sort of cult of behind-the-scenes wrestling that is bringing people to the on-screen product. Because they want to sit there and they want to try and read between the lines. They want to figure out what on Monday Night Raw or what on Monday Nitro is a work and what's a shoot. Then they want to argue about it in between their college classes. Oh my God, when the Ultimate Warrior, blah, 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 you know, when Rick Rude appeared on Nitro and Raw on the same night, you know, what's a work, what's a shoot, who's jumping to which company, and the political intrigue of the industry behind the scenes became just as important, if not more important, to not only that subculture that was created, but even the casual fan. Even the casual fan, the person that simply came to watch wrestling because the game on Monday Night Football was not that good. It was a blowout. And all of a sudden, they flip over and watch wrestling for the first time in their life. People in their 40s, you know, or whatever. You've got an audience that discovered wrestling, knew that it was a hot enough commodity that they had to stick around and watch it for a second.
It was then a cultural phenomenon.
Exactly.
It became what you do on Monday night. You watch wrestling.
And
especially for us in South Georgia. I mean, like I'd say 80% of the people in any class that I was in watched wrestling.
Oh, yeah. And restaurants around town had Nitro parties. They had wrestling viewing parties. They had live wrestling on Monday nights to coincide. Like, oh, come happy hour. And also there's a wrestling ring. And it's like, wait, what? I'm sorry. Okay. That, you know, there. Oh, look, there's Insane Tommy Dane. Okay. And that sort of thing. And I guess where I'm going with all this is to say that when that era sort of came to a close with McMahon buying out his competition, so you had the insanity of ECW was over. You had that weird, wild, bloody, wet dream of Barbed Wire City was gone forever. And its competition, the shit that sprung out of the closing of ECW, like XPW in California and CZW, those things have their audience. They certainly do. But they were never and will never be that phenomenon that ECW was. So you had ECW close. You had the largest threat to Vince McMahon's empire ever in Ted Turner and Eric Bischoff's World Championship Wrestling with the most successful wrestling faction there ever was, the NWO, the New World Order. And all of that came to an end. WCW and ECW get bought out. So then you have this occurrence and you lose some of your audience. And that included us. I think it took us a little bit longer because I want to see what happens when all of them are under the same umbrella. But of course, as has been talked about many, many times, all of the AOL Time Warner contracts, which kept the huge names like Sting and Flair and Goldberg off of WWF television, created, you know, a failure to culminate the joining of those companies, unfortunately.
And television-wise, I mean, even though McMahon owned everything, so you could actually see matches you've been dreaming about for years actually happen, McMahon pulled a McMahon and just had his people booked over everyone. We're just squashed, buried the ECW talent, buried the WCW talent. There were exceptions. I mean, Goldberg did okay, and Booker T did okay. I mean, there are a few people who they liked enough to kind of let them thrive a little bit in WWE. But for the most part, McMahon just wanted a, ha-ha, I win, and here's me winning. Here's my people winning over your people, which was sad to see, especially when some of your favorite people got destroyed by some of your not favorite people. But, you know.
Well, and then I think on the heels of that, you had the glut of wrestling deaths and wrestling tragedies. Things like Bret Hart retiring because of his injury. You had Mick Foley retiring, well, ostensibly retiring because of insanity that we got to see in Hell in a Cell, and then as featured in Beyond the Mat, where you get to see his children crying as The Rock repeatedly bashes him in the head with a steel chair, which, by the way, is not fake.
Absolutely.
By any stretch of the imagination, that shit ain't fake.
It's like DDP says, you can't fake gravity.
Exactly. Exactly. Thank you, DDP.
You're welcome.
So, in light of these retirements, then you have Owen Hart's death, and then those early deaths start coming rapid fire.
Yeah, absolutely.
You have wrestling suicides, you have heart attacks from enlarged hearts of years of drug abuse and or steroid abuse, you have overdoses. All of a sudden, wrestling becomes a hot topic again on, but now it's a hot topic on things like CNN, on Nancy Grace, and you get to see Wolf Blitzer talk about John Cronus dying, and it's like, that's not, I don't want to hear about Cronus that way.
Yeah.
And suicides got way out of control, you know, because half of the overdoses, let's just say for the sake of argument, statistically half of the overdoses were probably intentional. You know, the other half were simply overdoses, because these are guys who have been abusing drugs for so long. Nevertheless, in that first few years following the monopoly era, following the entertainment era, when McMahon controlled the whole thing, and there were just those tiny little offshoots like CZW, XPW, and then TNA was first getting off the ground in Nashville or wherever with the Jarretts. When that was happening, you had nothing but negative light being shown on it. So not only had wrestling fans lost interest in the televised product because there was now only one product, so you didn't get to watch wrestling all the time. You got to watch only what WWE put on. Furthermore, because you were watching what only they put on, you only got to see their vision or their version. Then you turn to any other channel and it's news stations covering how awful wrestling is, how it should be banned. You have Chris Nowinski talking about concussions.
Well, I mean, wrestling, like I said earlier, wrestling became a cultural phenomenon. It was big. I mean, NWO, arguably bigger than wrestling itself. You know, I've always said Hulk Hogan was bigger than wrestling. I think The Rock is now bigger than wrestling.
He certainly is now.
So basically, wrestling was like, you know, forgive the analogy, like the Kardashians. Basically, I mean, news networks, they
knew. That's going to be hard to forgive, but
I
get what you're saying.
You get what I'm saying, though. I mean, they were aware that everyone loves this wrestling thing, so we're going to more or less shit on it, because we're not going to report good things about it. We're going to, like, find the stories to tell people, and obviously they're not really broadcasting, you know, on WWE, how wrestlers are passing away. Just, oh, so-and-so passed away, you know, let's hear the bell, let's do a little montage. But, you know, CNN's going to say, well, here's how they died.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And like you said, that's what they're looking for.
Right.
Unfortunately, professional wrestling gave them a lot of fodder. They didn't have to look very hard. Mm-hmm. They literally had to turn on wrestling and, you know, or read a single wrestling website. And it was, oh, well, now this person's dead. Mr. Perfect's dead. Bam Bam Bigelow's dead. I mean, and then, you know, Mike Awesome kills himself. Test found it. And then, of course, Chris Benoit and the entire Benoit, Nancy Benoit tragedy. And that's been talked about a million times. And
there's no positive way to talk about it.
No, absolutely.
There
no
is
positive.
Zero positive way to talk about it.
It was a complete tragedy. Whether it had anything, everything, or nothing to do with the head trauma Chris Benoit had received. And I'm not saying that I'm endorsing any one of those positions.
No.
But it definitely had something to do with a lifetime of being bashed in the head and bashing your head into things.
Right.
And, you know, that sort of thing led to a horrible situation that hopefully nothing like that will ever happen again in the world of professional wrestling. And at least WWE has the public perception or the facade, and I don't necessarily mean that with the negative connotation, you know, that's going to go along with me saying the word facade, but I don't know. You can't know unless you're Vince McMahon or one of his children. You can't know how legitimate the wellness policy is.
Right.
You see it being used to their advantage. You see it being used to their detriment. So, you know, when you see it being used to their own detriment, you think, well, it must be fair. It must be thorough. It must be, you know, regular and regulated. And therefore, even if it hurts the company, we're going to do it because it's going to keep that person alive. It's going to keep the locker room clean.
Well, no, because Brock Lesnar apparently...
that's an entirely different...
But it shouldn't be.
Oh, right? Of course it shouldn't be. No, it absolutely shouldn't be. That's a very, very weird loophole.
But I wonder
that how WWE has decided to put in there.
And I wonder how blanketed the wellness program actually is, because also they put it out, you know, on their website now, which is very, you know, damning.
Sure. Oh no, absolutely. To the wrestler. And you hear little arguments from time to time that they don't know what they're suspended for.
Right. And people will always expect the worst and say, like, oh, they must have been doing cocaine. Or, like, oh, man, they must have been doing steroids. And it could be just for heavy alcohol abuse.
Or a little bit of marijuana. As long as that's not cool, it's not cool. And, you know, that's unfortunate. I mean, it's certainly better than taking a handful of sleeping pills or muscle relaxers. Because you land on your back repeatedly 3, 4, 5 nights a week. This is a very heavily medicated generation of wrestlers that are coming up. These are kids that grew up on Adderall. You know, these are kids that grew up, you know, on psych meds far greater than any generation before them, especially in professional wrestling. So, you know, these kids may not be going out and raising hell and getting drunk and, you know, shooting up steroids anymore. They might just be going back to the hotel room and taking their Adderall. And all of a sudden, they're suspended for 30 days without pay. And they're like, all I was doing was what I've been doing since the, you know, fifth grade when my parents decided that my ADD made me an asshole, you know, or whatever.
Well, the wellness thing, it is suspect because, like I said, it could be for a number of things. But I think it recently became suspect when Alberto Del Rio was popped for it. And then, not even the same day, but shortly after, Paige was. And it's pretty common knowledge that WWE office does not like the two of them dating, and has tried to find ways to separate them, you know, basically almost threatening or even threatening Paige that she'd be fired if they do not break up. Brand split happens. Del Rio goes one way. Paige goes another way. I don't know. It seems like that was a little fishy to me. Why wouldn't they both be suspended, like, immediately?
I'm sure they thought, well, this looks incredibly fishy. We only pop these two. All of a sudden, they toss Eva Marie in the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're confused because you're trying to think, wait, is this part of her new gimmick? Where they're saying, you know, they're constantly coming up with excuses of why she can't have her debut match. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, you're going, wait a minute. You're working the wellness policy into a gimmick now? And then at that point, you just think back 30 days and you think, well, they worked Roman Reigns' wellness policy violation into his gimmick for Battleground.
His must have been something.
And you had...
He was clearly punished.
Well, everything I saw about that was about Adderall. And I mean, that's why I even brought up Adderall as an example. And it's like, can somebody clear that up? You know, who's not talking and why? Who's telling who not to clear that up? You would think, you know, it's not illegal if he has a legitimate prescription. He needs to tweet out, hey, it's all good. Or, you know,
I'm sure contractually they cannot.
Oh,
they can't.
But you would think they would want to.
Oh, I'm sure they want to.
Because why allow for speculation on wrestling podcasts?
Yeah. That's our job to speculate.
That's pure speculation.
That's pure speculation, by the way. And what we said had very little to do with the actual matches that go on. This is just more of the behind-the-scenes stuff, which we find so interesting, which is what you listeners will probably find interesting and do find interesting. And it's just more perspective on that. So, hope you guys have enjoyed listening in. We've enjoyed having you listen in. And hope you guys learned a couple things. Hope you grew as individuals. And if not, I hope you were mildly entertained.
And if not, you can still come back and listen anyway because we're nice guys. And for those that are listening, please do come back. We have lots and lots planned for this show. We are daring to be ambitious. We are going to have some pretty cool interviews right off the top. We're going to talk to some friends of ours that have touched the wrestling business in one way or the other. Some folks that have been involved, been around, and we'll learn a little bit about their involvement as well as how they got into wrestling as a performer, as a part of the business, you know, and or even as a fan like the two of us. And that's going to be a lot of fun. And as we grow and hopefully have higher profile guests over time, and go from there. I mean, the sky's the limit. We want to talk about wrestling. We want to bring you as much interesting talk about professional wrestling as we can possibly squeeze out of this turnip called life. So, for myself, Darren Beasley,
and Perry Smith,
we would like to say thank you for listening to the Whole Reffin' Show.